I'm going to speak on Vedic perspectives on race, gender, and caste, which can be highly contentious topics. When I say Vedic, we should understand that there are various philosophical perspectives within the huge gamut of Vedic, Puranic culture and philosophy. I'm especially going to be talking according to the teachings of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, who single-handedly established Krishna consciousness in the Western world and throughout the world, who is known as a great saintly person who brought consciousness of God and a way of life, very pure way of life, dedicated to God, Krishna, turning around the lives of so many people, one of the greatest saints in the history of mankind. I'm going to be speaking according to his perspective and according to what I've learned and imbibed from him over the last 40 plus years. I may add some of my own insights. Also, I'm particularly going to raise this topic because recently there has been some concern over what are considered his racist, sexist, and casteist statements in terms of what is presently considered right by many people in the Western world. Srila Prabhupada wasn't against anyone. His whole life was dedicated for the upliftment of human society. His statements, even though they may appear to be racist, some of them may appear to be racist, casteist, sexist, but they're based on a philosophical understanding and a long tradition. First of all, we should know that the Vedanta philosophy speaks of the oneness of all living beings on the spiritual platform. Vedanta states, Ishopanishad states, Sarva Bhutani Ekatvam Anupashyatah. Seeing all living beings, the oneness, the spiritual oneness of all living beings. In Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, states, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihasini Shuni Chaivashvapakecha Pandita Samadarshinaha. That a person who is actually learned sees the oneness or sees in the same way a learned and gentle Brahmana, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane, a cow, a female elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. In Vedic society, the dog eater is the lowest and a qualified Brahmana is the highest. But someone who's actually learned sees them all in the same way, seeing that they're all living beings, part and parcel of God. At the same time, there is differentiation. You wouldn't embrace a tiger. If you came across a tiger in a forest, you wouldn't embrace him. We deal with living beings differently according to their present situation within the world as we perceive it now. So, what are these statements of Srila Prabhupada? We are enjoined to see the spiritual oneness of all living beings as part and parcel of Krishna, and at the same time to see practically that we're all in different situations in the world at the present time. Srila Prabhupada said that women are less intelligent, He pointed out that they can be temptresses who take a man's attention away from the spiritual and bind him in a web of illusory attraction to this material world. He said that women should not be independent, they should be submissive to their husbands. The Vedic perspective is also very respectful to women, to chaste women. In the Vedic history, the two great battles, the Battle of Lanka, recalled in the Ramayana, and the Battle of Kurukshetra, which is the central topic of Mahabharata, the story of Mahabharata. Both of them were fought because chaste women were mistreated. Millions of men went to fight because of the mistreatment of women. Now, I'm quite aware that taking up these contentious topics, I will be blasted by persons who think that all traditions all over the world that ever existed previously were all racist, sexist, hierarchical, exploitive, and that now we've got it right. Everyone in the world, every society in the world, prior to the 21st century, they all got it wrong. Now we got it right. And any ancient tradition, any religious tradition, any tradition which upholds anything which even has a slight scent of what they call racism or sexism or stratification within society must be wrong, and such persons, even without listening to this talk, will blast me and reject everything I say, even though they don't listen to what I say, and even though such persons are incapable of sober listening or consideration. It's an extraordinary arrogance coming from the Western world, which itself is racked with innumerable social problems. The chaotic, confused society of the Western world, full of so many imbalances, feels that it's its duty to tell everyone all over the world what they're doing wrong. During the colonial era, the Western people thought they had to go all over the world to civilize the people and give them the Western moral values. Now the Western moral values have largely changed, and again, the Western people think that those people who follow the values that they inculcated in those days, it's now their duty to tell them that they're all wrong. Extraordinary arrogance. The present idea is that anyone who's in a higher position must be wrong. Just by the fact that there is stratification in society, there's hierarchy, anyone in the higher position must be wrong. And they must be pulled down. This is neo-Marxism. Marx recognized that in the hierarchy there is exploitation, inequality. His solution didn't work. Communism was a terrible mess. It's based on a misunderstanding that we are all equal materially. Spiritually, we are all equal. That the Vedic culture recognizes. Spiritual equality, but materially, there are differences. It is not all the same. This is the Vedic perspective, that there are differences. And even without any big Vedic philosophy, it's very easy to see that there are differences. Men and women are not the same. Even within races, we can make a broad generalization, which the truth of it can easily be understood, that Italians and Swedes have many differences between them. Italians tend to be more gregarious, to wear their heart on their sleeve, to have a culture of outgoing. They can be very raucous, enjoying life, whereas Swedes tend to be much more reserved, introverted, less sociable. I'm just talking in general terms, which we can all understand. It's not racism. Italians and Swedes are both different kinds of European peoples, and generally they have certain characteristics, and they're quite different in many ways. It's not racism to say that. If we say that here in America, I'm speaking in America, that blacks tend to disproportionately excel at physical activities like sports, I don't think anyone will have any problem with that. The fact is that everyone's not all the same, and there are different kinds of races, different kinds of cultures. In some cultures, they emphasize a lot on noetic ability, intellectual ability. In other cultures, they emphasize a lot on physical ability. I'm just speaking in a broad way. The things are different. The Vedic culture recognizes difference and attempts to maximize each person's abilities and to restrain the worst side of them. This is called the Varnashram culture, which is called in English terms the caste culture. The idea is that different people have different abilities and they should be channeled in that way. People with good intellectual abilities, who are spiritually minded, they should be the spiritual leaders of society. Persons who have a natural tendency to lead, they should be trained and given the opportunity to do so. We say democracy, but not everyone can be the leader of society. Just try picking up anyone from the street and make them the President of the United States of America. However much we may like or dislike the President of the United States of America, it takes some certain kind of abilities. Not everyone can do it. It's foolishness to think that everyone can do everything. Some people have that knack for making money, and that's also one part of human society. Traders are needed to get goods from the producer to the consumer. You may say, well, it could be done in some socialistic way. Yeah, it could be done that way also. But trading has been the system since time immemorial. And some people are good in arts and crafts, and some people, well, they're not that talented in anything in particular, and we also need people who can do menial work. The harmonization of society based on the reality that people are different, recognizing that they are not all the same, it leads to a well-stratified society. Instead of trying to imagine that everyone's all the same, everyone's all on the same level, pull down those who are higher. No, It's better to see people have good qualities and those the bad qualities, just like someone, the traders, they may go wild and exploit everyone and squeeze out profits. That has to be restrained. The leaders shouldn't become despots. This is Varnashram society. The understanding behind it is that there is reincarnation and that we are all put in a certain situation according to our previous activities, what we deserve, what we desire. We're in a particular situation according to what we did previously. We've got things to work out in this life. We have to do it from a particular platform. We get a male body or a female body. We may be born in a high family, a rich family, a low family. We may be born with very good looks or not very good looks, good health, not good health. Karma and reincarnation is a basic fact of existence according to the Vedic philosophy and culture. And actually, there is a huge amount of practically irrefutable anecdotal evidence. Is that an oxymoron? Irrefutable anecdotal, which unfortunately the academic orthodoxy in the Western world, which dominates academia everywhere, they just don't want to look into this. The whole of the Western world, 2,000 years of brave civilization, has grown up on the misunderstanding that we have one life only, and then it's all finished. But the Vedic culture is based on the understanding that reincarnation is a fact. We're here for a certain time to work through certain things. We've got the situation we have according to what we deserve. We have to act in such a way according to our present station in life to improve ourselves with the aim of having ultimate spiritual realization. Even apart from that, hierarchy in society has never been questioned until Marx came along. Of course, it may have been questioned, but at least the prominent questioner that we know in the world today is Marx, who wanted to make everyone equal. But we see in communism it didn't work because you need leaders. You need a managerial class. That was there. It was never that the head of the Soviet Union lived in the same way as the average comrade in a coal mine, for instance. The Vedic culture, like all cultures pretty much everywhere, just very reasonably accepts that there are differences. Some people are going to be higher than others. Some people are going to be better in some ways than others. What is best? Well, that will vary according to the goal of the civilization. The aim of Vedic culture is ultimately spiritual realization. So people who are advanced in spiritual realization are considered better. The Brahmanas, they're supposed to be spiritually advanced, and they are highly respected for that. The Kshatriyas, the ruling class, are highly respected. They have to be respected, otherwise they can't rule. And we say, well, no one should rule anyone else. According to what I understand, that's a crazy idea. Parents have to take charge of their children. There are many people who, even in adult life, can't really properly look after themselves. Better they have someone in charge of them. They can't properly look after themselves. Well, look, the prisons are overflowing. There are drug addicts everywhere. better that people, their life is taken charge of by a pious, benevolent dictator, if you like, someone who can tell them what to do and structure society, instead of having a society based on everyone is equal and let everyone act according to their own happiness and people don't know what's good for them and they end up messing their life. It's better to have a strong ruler. That's the Vedic culture, and practically all over the world that was the culture. The problem, and we're getting into a big discussion here, which I won't get into too much, but all over the world there were kings who ruled. That system broke down when kings became exploitive instead of seeing themselves as representatives of God, who are leader servants. That's the modern lingo for that. Similarly, what is the caste system with its iniquities, no doubt? It was originally based on a meritocracy that although in general someone is born in a particular family to give he or her the opportunity to develop according to the culture of that family. You may be born in a family of intellectuals or a family of merchants or a family of potters or whatever. So you're born according to your previous activities, what you deserve, but it's also open to development, that even though someone may be born in a lower caste, they can rise if they develop the qualities of a higher caste. And we're saying higher here. Yes, it is higher in terms of social status, but the real higher and lower is in terms of one's spiritual advancement, one's ability to contribute to society, to claim superiority simply by birth is racism, that can be said. But there is something in that also. If we consider that people are placed in different situations according to their previous activities, their karma. All are equal spiritually, but materially there is discrimination. All are equal spiritually means at the core we are all equal spiritually, but in our own individual journey through many, many births, we get different situations. So someone is not at all spiritually advanced. Someone is highly spiritually advanced. So although we are equal spiritually and in the core, we're at different levels of our spiritual journey. So Vedic culture, like all traditional cultures, like human society everywhere, in all times and all places, recognizes their differences. There is hierarchy. Some people are fit to lead. Others are fit to follow, and it's better for them to follow rather than trying to have artificial independence. Another point, I'm just iterating this, the recognition that reincarnation is a fact. And there is a need for everyone, whatever position we have in human society, there is a need for everyone to develop spiritually. That is the ultimate goal of life. Whatever situation one may be in, one can and should develop spiritually. The concept of reincarnation makes sense. It explains why someone is born in a rich family, someone is born in a poor family, someone is born in a time of peace, someone is born in a time of war. There's a lot of evidence for it. So in this way, some individual people are higher than materially. And it may be that some races and castes are higher and some are lower. We are placed in certain situations according to our spiritual development, whether we have acted piously or impiously, whether we have acted virtuously or sinfully. We get our birth accordingly, and by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, people with similar karmic reactions, people with similar karmic backgrounds are put together, and some are higher and some are lower. If we are born in a family which is dedicated to spiritual culture, that is a higher birth. And if we're born in a family which is given to just enjoying the senses, that's a lower birth, according to Vedic culture, in which it's understood that this human birth is very rare. We go through so many different species of life, 8,400,000 species of life. Human life is very rare. It's meant for God realization. Generally, the Brahmanas are considered highest because they have the most important service, guiding society in accord with spiritual objectives, according to dharma, the way of life, which is based on spiritual uplift, themselves acting in a highly pure manner, setting the perfect example. This is the ideal. Things have deteriorated in course of time, no doubt. But the Brahmanas are higher than the Kshatriyas, the ruling class, who are higher than the merchant class, who are higher than the servant class, or Shudras, the lowest caste, and there are lower than that, but they're not even considered caste. They're considered lower because they're more attached to sensual enjoyment, but all have a role. Everyone has to cooperate. It's not that simply we can have only one class of person. We need in society leaders, followers. We need those who can give spiritual guidance. We need those who can go and work on the land and produce food. We need carpenters. We need potters, we need barbers, all these kind of people are required. And we see that in the big public sacrifices which were previously performed by kings, the efforts of the whole society are brought together and everyone has a role to play. And in major temples in India at the present time, even now in the temple festivals, everyone from all the different castes have a role to play. And what about untouchability? This idea that some people are untouchable. Well, there's a reason for that. It may have been misused, but there is a reason for that. That those who are going to worship God in the temple have to be ritually pure. They have to bathe, take a full bath before going into the temple. They have to put on fresh, clean cloth. If we're going to approach God, we have to be pure in mind, pure in body, pure in dress. And people who eat meat, who regularly get drunk, and in whose life there is very little spirituality whatsoever, the consciousness and the very activities of such people are ritually contaminating. That's why they're considered untouchable. May like it or don't like it, but that's the way it is. You may say that Brahmanas lord it over others, but actually it wasn't like that. They had privilege, but they had to lead a very stringent life. They had to rise very early, engage in all kinds of rituals and austerities. Brahmanas are supposed to cultivate poverty, the knowledge of Brahman. Shudras, the lowest caste, they're allowed to drink alcohol and eat meat, but Brahmanas are not. Of course, in some situations, it's a complex culture. In some situations, they do. But in general, Brahmanas have to live a very austere life. That's why Brahmanas, those who are born in Brahmana families, don't like to marry those from a Shudra family because the culture is so different. But Shudras also don't like to marry Brahmanas. They wouldn't want to because they want to maintain their opportunity to freely eat meat and drink alcohol and everything. So Brahmanas do have privilege, but they also have responsibilities. They also have very high standards which they have to live up to. Again, I'm speaking about the ideal. It has deteriorated in so many ways. It is Kali Yuga, the age of deterioration. But this is the Vedic culture based on the Vedic philosophy, based on knowledge of reincarnation. In the Vedic culture, real knowledge begins with Atato Brahma Jignyasa. This is the first sutra, the first aphorism in the Vedanta Sutras. Now, having attained human life, having attained understanding that everything in this world is temporary and miserable, one should aspire to understand transcendence. This is the basis of Vedic culture. It begins with knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit. This is the first teaching given by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. The body is temporary. The spirit, the Atma, inhabiting every body is eternal. So cultivating knowledge and realization of our spiritual nature, instead of trying to enjoy the temporary body, that is the basis of Vedic culture. And this is particularly upheld and cultivated by the Brahmanas. Therefore, they're not expected to do manual labor in the field. They have such an important, the only important thing ultimately, which is to cultivate the knowledge of their spiritual existence so that they can spread this knowledge in human society. Knowing that body after body, we are transmigrating, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. We get our present body based on our previous activities and our consciousness. Yang, this Bhagavad Gita, yang vapi smran bhavam tyajyante kalevaram tam tam evaita kontaya sata tad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever we think of at the time of death, which is based on all the cumulative thoughts, the consciousness that we've cultivated throughout life, that results in our next body. Shariram yadavapnoti yachchap yutkramatishvaraha grihit vaitani sangyati vayor gandhani vashayat. Again in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that as we go from one body to another body, we carry with us the consciousness from a previous life, just like from one place to another, the smell, it may be a good smell or a bad smell, is carried by the wind. So this Atato Brahma Jignyasa recognizes we're getting birth after birth after birth, is full of suffering, birth is followed by death, in between there is struggle, there is disease, there is old age. Not everyone is enlivened or not everyone is struck by this, even after hearing it. Those who are real Brahmanas, they cultivate such knowledge. They live their life based on the knowledge that we are spiritual beings, we are trapped in material existence due to trying to enjoy matter, when we try to enjoy, that naturally leads to suffering. Who is a Shudra? Janmana Jayate Shudra. Everyone is born as a Shudra. Shudra means one who laments. All are needed again in human society. We need all kinds of people, just like we need a head, we need arms, we need a stomach, we need legs. Still, the head is the most important. The Brahmanas are compared to the head, because they're the intellectuals, they give guidance. If the head is disordered, mental illness, then the body acts in a way which is unbeneficial for the individual and for all of society. So the Brahmanas are so important in human society. They have some privilege, yes, but they're given that privilege because they do not misuse it. So spiritually, all are equal intrinsically, but materially, we're at different levels. In Vedic culture, people would accept, I'm in my present position, it is my fate due to my own activities. If someone is above me, they deserve to be in that position. I'm in the position that I deserve to be in. If others are privileged above me, well, yeah, I should respect them. They deserve it. Not that you begrudge them. People are leaders because that's what they're meant for. They were placed in that situation to be a leader. I was placed in a situation where I'm supposed to be subservient. That's what I meant for at my particular birth right now. It is the arrangement of God. It has been ordained for me. It is what position I'm in now is the position given to me by God. It is the best position for me. I should act according to that position and cultivate spiritual development. And in this way, I can advance. So in this way, there's no revolution, there's no upheaval. Vedic culture recognizes that everyone can attain the highest stage, even though one may be disadvantaged in terms of one's present position due to one's previous activities. Everyone, if they plug into Krishna, to Krishna consciousness, they can go to the highest stage without going through many, many, many births of gradually going higher. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mam hi parthavya parshracha yepi syuf pape yonaha striyo vaishas tata shudras tepi yanti parangatim. In this verse, Krishna says that some people are of sinful birth. Whoa, that sounds like racism, doesn't it? And Krishna gives examples that women are considered lower, that's sexism. And then Vaishyas and Shudras, Vaishyas the merchant class and the Shudras the servant class, the servile class. Well, that sounds like casteism. We've got it all in one verse. Racism, sexism, genderism, and casteism. But Krishna says they can all, from that situation, they can all attain the highest level if they take full shelter in me. So by that consideration, according to the Bhagavad culture, the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was given to us by Srila Prabhupada, there are divisions materially, but whatever one's material situation one may be in, one can attain the highest level of Krishna consciousness, and spiritually, even though one may be materially on a lower status, someone who is spiritually advanced, they can be higher than a brahmana. Chandalopi dvija shrestha hari bhakti parayanaha. Even if one is born in the very lower than the servant class, people who are practically uncivilized, they are considered better than a high-level, pure-living brahmana if the person from the very low position is a devotee of Krishna, sincere devotee of Krishna, and the Brahmana isn't. Another example, Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha Abhira Shumva Yavana Kasadayaha Yeneja Papa Yadapa Shraya Shraya Shudhyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Namaha. There's a listing of all various fallen races from the Vedic spiritual understanding. Among them are Turks, Greeks, Chinese. Oh, this is terrible racism, isn't it? They can be purified by association with pure devotees of Krishna. So that would be called racism. But it's simply a recognition that different people are on different levels, but they can all come to the highest level. Also, it's understood that in this Kali Yuga, the age of deterioration and degradation, pretty much everyone is fallen, whether one is a Brahmana caste or Indian, non-Indian, Hindu, non-Hindu. Everyone is fallen from the proper standard. Therefore, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nascheva, 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 Gatir Anyata. In this Kali Yuga, there is no other way, no other way, no other way for spiritual realization to achieve the ultimate goal than chanting the names of Krishna. Hari, that's the Hare Krishna movement, is chanting Hare Krishna. Kale Dosharnidhe Rajan, Astiheko Mahan Guna, Kirtanad Eva Krishnasya. Mukta Sangha Parang Vrajet. Kali Yuga is full of faults in so many ways. Everything is a mess. But we can get out of this ocean of all kinds of discrepancies simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, and we can go to the highest platform. So this process of Krishna consciousness, chanting the holy names, it purifies, it brings us all to the best platform. A great example of this is myself. According to strict Vedic culture or Hindu culture, I am by birth lower than the lowest. But by chanting Hare Krishna, I am widely honored by the followers, the present-day followers of the Vedic culture. Many quote-unquote Hindus offer respect to someone like myself who is, although from a very different and unknowledgeable, ignorant background, ignorant in the sense we don't know about reincarnation, we don't know about the Vedic culture, but we've come into this culture thanks to Srila Prabhupada and those who are in Hindu culture. Many of them respect persons like myself for having adopted it seriously. So Vedic culture simply recognizes that differences are there. They can't just be wished away or washed away by some campaign or some ideology. Live with them. Make the best use of a bad bargain. We're all in a bad situation in this material world, whatever situation we are in. Chant Hare Krishna and make spiritual advancement. But still, there are levels. Some by birth are higher than others. Generally, the male form is considered better for self-realization than the female form. Although with chanting Hare Krishna, everyone can rise to the highest platform. The whole Vedic Varnashram system is largely broken and needs rebuilding. It's just not working on birth alone. We need Brahmanas. We need real Brahmanas, not someone simply claiming to be a Brahmana by birth. We need people who are actually cultivating Atato Brahma Jignasa, inquiring into, searching after spiritual knowledge, leading a very pure life based on spiritual realization. Even though the caste system is largely broken down, it's not all bad. There is a book by one Professor R. Vaidyanathan, Caste as Social Capital, which points out that even on the material platform, even up to the present day, caste solidarity has its benefits. Although casteism puts, or the caste system puts, people in a certain mold, it has its benefits also. There's no anxiety for employment. What are you going to do with your life? You don't have to spend huge amounts of money to get an education, which may or may not help you. Your employment is set up. If you're born in a potter's family, become a potter or a potter's wife, who also knows how to make various items from clay. If you're born in a merchant's family, then you continue the family business. There's no anxiety for marriage. That's arranged for you. So there's no anxiety. Who will I marry? And the marriage was very stable in that society. So even the caste system is much maligned, and there are reasons for maligning it. It wasn't all bad. There are many good things about it. It's a very different concept to the society of today, where they talk about freedom and opportunity, but mass schooling or forced schooling is not so much to give people opportunity, but to turn out useful idiots, tools in a big economic system in which most people are simply exploited. There's no guarantee of employment. You could be employed in a company for 20 years, 30 years, and they just throw you out. So this mass schooling, we say, yes, everyone, we should give everyone the opportunity for schooling so you can have a better future. It's basically a kind of indoctrination, making asses. Today's society is no less exploitive than any society previously. It's just a veneer of being better with the idea that you have freedom, opportunity. What is this freedom? How many people can come up from a freedom and opportunity? Yeah, but how many people come up from a very depressed social condition to be leaders of society? Very, very few. Even if you do, what's the point if we don't have spiritual knowledge? Now, what is the point of modern civilization? What is the point? Simply live, eat, sleep, drink, poop, and die. Oh, and have sex also, yeah. There's no knowledge of spiritual values. If we have spiritual understanding, then we'll know that spiritually we're all equal. Without that, this egalitarianism, it may be well-intentioned and idealistic, but it's impractical because it's oblivious to the realities of the human condition, and it's oblivious to our spiritual situation. This idea that you can pull yourself up just by hard work. Oh yeah, really? You can do anything you like. You can get ahead. It all depends on your desire and your hard work. Oh yeah? Can a 1 meter midget compete in professional basketball where the average height is about 2 meters? You can practice and train as much as you like. I mean, you can't compete. The men and women in swimming, the women can't compete with the men. That's why sometimes we've seen that one man in this transgender, in the middle of all this transgenderism madness, a man calls himself a woman, competes with the women, and wins, even though he's not a champion in the men's swimming competition. But if he calls himself a woman, he can easily win all the competitions. Why is that? Because in terms, generally speaking, the man's body is going to be stronger than that of a woman. So the greatest woman swimmer is just not going to be able to compete with the best of the men's swimmers. You can't make a donkey into a racehorse. This isn't big philosophy. It's just practical common sense that everyone should be able to understand unless their brain is messed up by a stupid so-called education. If you have enough pluck, you can pull yourself up despite disadvantages. There are many examples. We're not saying it doesn't happen. But some people just don't have that pluck. Not everyone is motivated to get ahead. The vast majority of people just get on with an ordinary life. That's the way it is. Not everyone can excel. The idea everyone can excel and get ahead, well, you wouldn't even notice it if everyone became so brilliant, because they'd all still be on the same level. This promotion of get ahead, it's a big disturbance. They're telling, just like telling young girls from depressed background, you can get ahead, you can be the greatest, but they're stuck in their social status, most of them, and they become frustrated. Equal opportunity. How many in the Parliament of the United Kingdom, how many in the Congress and the Senate in the United States are from a working class background? There is privilege. It's going on. However much you may try to tear it down, make a socialist state, a communist state, wonderful idea. Stalin managed to get rid of the privileged class by killing them all. Is that a good idea? Even you see today, the leaders of the socialists, they're not workers. We are for the people, patronizingly. These so-called socialist intellectuals and activists, they stand up for the people, but they're not the people. And anyway, if you get love of God, which is the real aim of human life, what does it matter if you're high or low in this miserable human society? The rich man gets sick, the poor man gets sick, the rich man is maybe more full of anxieties than the poor man. What does it matter? We're only in this body for a short time. What is the meaning of being a big, big leader, big success? The big leader and the big success in the next life may be a dog. Very likely. But the love of God means eternal bliss. This is the real goal of life, cultivating spiritual knowledge. Race, caste, gender, there is higher and lower. Ultimately, it should be understood according to one's aptitude for cultivating spiritual knowledge and love of God. Those who are outside of the Varnashram culture, the Vedic culture, they are considered lower, because the aim of Vedic Varnashram society is spiritual knowledge. High birth means in Vedic culture, pretty much anywhere, is Janmaishvarya Shruta Shri, to be born in an aristocratic, rich family, to be intelligent and well-educated, to have bodily beauty. So presently, some societies, or within the society, some people have these advantages and these privileges. Presently, most Africans lack this. Therefore, according to the Vedic stratification, they would be considered lower, but things can change. One civilization which is leading the world now can flip-flop, become very low, can become just an ordinary civilization. The Babylonian civilization, so powerful. And now the people living in that Mesopotamia, people living in that part of the world, are dominated by, shall I say it, the American army. They want them out, they can't get them out. So some races are considered higher and lower according to what they have in terms of material and spiritual advantages. From the spiritual point of view, no one should be looked down on, but from the material point of view, there are differences. In the Vedic culture, women are considered less intelligent because they are more inclined to enjoy this world. That very motive to enjoy this world is antithetical to getting out of it, which is the aim of spiritual cultivation. They're more inclined to get luxury, opulence, all these kind of things. No doubt women can become doctors, engineers, lawyers, politicians, professors in the modern age. But still, despite all opportunity, we see that in the highest echelons of government, science, brain surgery, for instance, women are, what they would call, underrepresented. Why is that? Is it simply due to men pushing them down? I don't think so. Women have a natural tendency, which is much suppressed and malformed in modern society, a natural tendency to, believe it or not, have children and to be mothers, which means homemakers. They're not naturally inclined to get out in the world and rustle up with others. Controversial topics. The nature we have according to our body is according to our previous consciousness, and previous life, given by God, given by God according to our karma. The woman's body is made for reproduction, for nurturing, which means they need shelter and protection, which is a man's responsibility. Women, in that sense, are meant to assist men. It's a complex topic because people can't understand the ABCs of human psychology or even human physiology nowadays. They want to make women into men, men into women. Women, according to Vedic culture, Vedic perspective, are not independent. Actually, independence is impossible for anyone. We all rely on others. We're all interdependent. That's the meaning of society. We need different people in human society. We need food producers. We need intellectuals. We need doctors. We're all interdependent. It's better to acknowledge that and work cooperatively. Some people can be strong leaders, but most people are better suited as followers and are happy like that. Particularly women, because they have to look after the children. They need men or the husband to take charge, look after them. That's like a dream in modern society. It's the family unit has been battered and smashed so badly by wrong ideas. Women's independence. Whoever promotes women's independence is actually the greatest enemy of women, because no one, man or woman, can be happy by this idea of being independent. We have the Marlborough man, the rugged individual, riding out into the wilderness, in the desert, on his horse. Well, there are horse breeders, right? He has his lasso. Who made the rope for the lasso? Who made the saddle for his horse? Even the Marlborough man, coughing and smoking himself to death, someone made the cigarette for him also. This idea of being the rugged individual, it's a ridiculous idea. Of course, some people have more ability to work individually, but ultimately, we're all dependent. This idea of independence it's an insane idea, promoting the idea to be totally independent, don't depend on anyone, take charge of your own life. Yeah, take charge of your own life, but don't forget, take charge of your own life means we have to make decisions. Yes, okay. But recognize, Vedic culture recognizes that we all have to work together. And women need protection. Otherwise, if they're just thrown out into the world, then they get sexually exploited. So it's better they have one husband who takes responsibility for them. Nowadays, you won't get a husband like that because men are not trained to take responsibility. They're told they're useless, and so they don't even try to be responsible. Women's independence, the idea of it might seem attractive to young women who can go and enjoy themselves here and there and have a great time and go to parties, but then they struggle their whole life alone with no support. Maybe they get a government check for having babies from someone who left them. They struggle their whole life alone with no support, no emotional shelter, no love, and they end up alone and bitter, blaming men for their self-inflicted misery. So whoever promotes the idea that women should be tolerant, they should be independent, they're the greatest enemy of society also, because it's creating unnecessary friction. It's creating a situation in which children don't get raised with the shelter of a family, fixed mother and father. There are many arguments for and against feminism. I'm just not going to get fully into that. I'm just trying to give a glimpse of the Vedic perspective. It's not just simply putting people down. You're lower, I'm better. There's reason behind it. There's understanding behind it. There's a whole great culture behind it. Okay, another contentious subject, homosex. Srila Prabhupada, he said that the homosexual appetite of one man for another is not proper for any man in a proper frame of mind. It's demoniac. Whoa, that won't go down well today. But in Vedic culture, it's understood that the sexual act is meant for procreation. And thus, homosex is not okay because it fulfills no useful function. It's only for personal bodily pleasure. The natural result of sex is procreation. And Srila Prabhupada was also on the case of heterosexuals who have sex like cats and dogs simply for bodily gratification. In the Vedic culture, in the spiritual culture, everything should be done with a higher purpose. Everyone should be responsible. That means if you have sex, you should be prepared to have children. In fact, the sexual act is meant for having children. And then looking after them, training them to perpetuate the culture and values of the society. There is an exception. Persons like myself may be whole life celibate if they're completely dedicated to spiritual values. Otherwise, family life, sex life, it has a purpose. Otherwise, you're like an animal just having sex. Homosexuality quietly tolerated in Vedic culture, not encouraged like today. Why was Srila Prabhupada so hard on that? Well, he wanted brahmanas to lead society, not persons engaging in sex just to fulfill some animalistic desire. This fixation on sex is grossly overstress on sex in contemporary society. It's making a big mess of human society, misguiding us, a terrible misuse of human life to be so much concerned with sex, which is very rare. This human life is very rare. It's meant for God realization. We just get fixated on sex and we come down to the levels of dogs and cats who just engage in sex just as an animalistic, gross, lusty propensity. How about this? If you say that people have a natural inclination for homosex, so it should be allowed and encouraged, well, why not pedophilia? Well, it's not consensual. Well, yeah, the poor children, they suffer. But what about the poor pedophiles? There are many of them. What about their natural inclination? Why victimize them? I'm not trying to promote pedophilia, but just see where the logic leads, that you should be allowed to engage in, or it should be encouraged that you engage in sex just whatever way you feel like, because it feels good. And what about the poor pedophiles? No, the sexual propensity should be engaged for producing children who are going to be looked after and guided toward the real goal of life, which is the spiritual goal of life. How about this? I have an idea. What do we call that? A thought experiment. If COVID had massively reduced the world population, or if somehow, boom, the world population is very quickly massively reduced, let's say it's reduced to 20 million just in a short span of time. The present world population of human is reduced to 20 million. I'm pretty sure that all this propaganda for homosex, transgender, free sex, it would just vanish. Traditional roles would arise again due to a need to increase the population. This free sex that we have, just let everyone left, right, and center stick your dick in whatever hole is attractive to you. It's a product of contraceptives that you can get away with it, but there are the laws of God. Society without a spiritual compass thinks that we only live once, enjoy while you can. So all of this might seem outrageously racist or sexist for the contemporary mind, but not from the Vedic perspective. The Vedic perspective is informed by understanding of the fundamental laws of the universe, that there is reincarnation, there is transmigration of souls, there is karmic reaction, there are karmic reactions, there are laws based on knowledge of reincarnation, directing how human society should be structured. So without that knowledge, if we think that life is just meant live once, enjoy while you can, and then statements which say that, well, Shudras are lower, women should not be independent, against homosex, it may hit the person in modern society, deeply conditioned by the ignorance that they've imbibed from this insane society which thinks it's the best society ever, although it's probably the worst. So what hits the deeply conditioned person as incorrect, it may just be merely politically incorrect, especially when seen in the light of the perennial teachings of the Vedas. By the way, in personal dealings, Srila Prabhupada didn't disparage anyone for their race or their gender or their caste. He tried to engage everyone in the spiritually uplifting activities of Krishna consciousness. He would sometimes refer to someone disparagingly, not often, but he would sometimes refer to someone disparagingly within his own group. If they acted wrongly or stupidly, he might say something, you're just a Shudra, or something like that. Even that, not very often. He welcomed everyone. He tried to encourage everyone to come up to their real spiritual destiny. But at the same time, he realistically recognized that there are differences, and we should recognize the differences. That means to discriminate and structure society according to that. I try to follow in his footsteps. Hare Krishna.